Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
All right, back where we belong, in the studio. Reggie, behind the glass, chomping on his, what does it look like? Roast beef? Subway sub. Back on the horse. All right, well, put it down. Check the levels. They look good in here. I'm sure they look good in there. Mic is hot. Talent is ready. Let's just do this thing. Put it in the book. 183. And I'll do the three S's, and then I'll do the countdown, and then I'll create some podcast magic. Sounds like a plan. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com, or this podcast is available anywhere where you download your favorite podcast. So wherever that may be, whatever platform you use, just make sure every Monday you are there to download and listen to this podcasting extravaganza that we drop each week on you and the world. Don't forget, if you are on a downloading platform, subscribe to that platform so it's easy to reach. Rate this podcast, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And most of all, if you'd be so kind, tell your friends. Nothing like word of mouth to spread the word. So send them a link, send them a message. Send them the podcast and send them good words about Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Your loyalty and your, I guess, what would we say, friendship? Yeah, I like that. Is most appreciated. That's why I'm here every week. To keep making friends with you, to firm up our friendship and hopefully make some new ones along the way. As you enjoy this podcast for your podcasting pleasure, like I said, one of the many few who has the good housekeeping seal of approval for podcasts, if that ever existed. If that existed, I would get one. That's what I'm saying. All I ask is for 1 hour a week, folks. Not much to ask, but thank you for joining and listening on a regular basis. If you like what you hear, whether you're a longtime listener to this podcast or just relatively new, don't forget, on the WGNplus.com website, you can go to the entertainment section, and then you'll see a prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and you will find all previous 182 episodes, which can only mean one thing. Do the math and show your work. Welcome to episode 183. As we march forward to number 200, which, according to math, show your work, will be in 17 weeks. 17 weeks, 4 into 17 is 4 with a remainder of 1. Don't you love remainders when you did long division? I loved putting the little R and then whatever the remainder was, and we get to do that here. 4 into 17 goes 4 times. 4 times 4 is 16. Put the 16 down. 17 minus 16 is 1. So it'll be 4 remainder 1, which means in 4 months, we will hit number 200. Wow. And once again, show your math. So we've got, this is November. So we've got December, January, February, March. Sometime in March, or maybe early April, we'll be hitting the 200 mark. Pretty cool. And if you've been here for all 200, thank you so much. I will have been here for all 200, so why the heck haven't you? That's the way I look at it. What are you doing that's so important? You can't come here for an hour a day. Jeez. You got all those other hours to do whatever you want. You can just give me one, right? And you say, Jim, well, why should I give you one? Well, if you listen to this podcast, you will understand why you should give me that 1 hour a day. I'm going to prove it to you in the next hour. So there we go. What I'd like to talk about today is one of my favorite filmmakers. I have been a movie fan for forever, at least my forever. I remember one of the first movies I really remember going to see was as a very young child, and I have memories of this, and I couldn't have been more than 4 or 5, was seeing in the theater. There was a theater on the northwest side of Chicago called the Will Rogers Theater, which is sadly no longer there, but my gosh, my mom and I used to go there on a regular basis. They would always show the newest Disney films or the children's films. It showed first run movies. I think they had a couple theaters in there, but they always got the Disney films, and it was in the neighborhood, a quick bus ride. My mom didn't drive, and so, but we'd get on the bus, forget about us, and put the blame on me. and it wasn't a long bus ride at all to the Belmont Central area where that was. But I do remember seeing The Jungle Book, the great Disney film from the late 60s, which has some of the great songs like Bare Necessities by Phil Harris, I Want to Be Like You by Louis Prima, and Sebastian Cabot's voice was in there. A lot of famous actors and famous voice actors of the time in that movie. That was actually, Jungle Book was Walt Disney's last film before he passed away. If he were alive today, and I said this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, we were talking about streaming, I don't even think he could have imagined the kingdom. Oh, I think he would have imagined, you know, it is a magic kingdom, but it's more than a kingdom. It's an empire. I don't even think he could have imagined the empire that he had ultimately created. And it will continue to go on. But my gosh, what Disney owns now between the films and the theme parks and the merchandise and these movie franchises, as I said in a couple of podcasts earlier, Star Wars, Marvel, they own the Muppets, they own all the cartoons, they own Pixar animated films, as well as the Disney vaults. Unbelievable. But I remember seeing at the Will Rogers Jungle Book, I remember seeing Dr. Doolittle and singing. I have a couple Dr. Doolittle dolls of Rex Harrison from that great original film, not the Eddie Murphy one, the cool one with Rex Harrison. If I could talk to the animals, just think of it. Speaking chimpanzee. My Dr. Doolittle doll used to talk. Used to pull a string and he talked. It's a little old right now. The string just goes, slides right back in. But I do have him displayed, my Dr. Doolittle. So my point is, I've been going to see movies for a very long time. And then because of my love of movies, in my professional career, I was a movie critic. I wrote about movies. I had a movie column for a publication here in the Chicago area called The Illinois Entertainer. I did that for about 7 or 8 years on a monthly basis. I also wrote movie reviews for different magazines, and I edited a national magazine in my mid to late 20s called Inside Hollywood, and I was the editor and one of the chief writers for that, too. So I love movies. Huge, huge fan of movies. Old and new. Yes, I watch black and white movies. I don't always talk a lot about movies here, but I thought I really have to. I have the real need to talk about one that I've recently seen by one of my favorite filmmakers. And ironically, it also dovetails well into another topic connected to that. So it works well. Martin Scorsese, one of my favorite directors of all time. Anybody that is of a certain age, if you're 50 at least, you grew up with Martin Scorsese films. And going back to one of his first Mean Streets, and that began his collaboration with Robert De Niro. And then, of course, some of the great ones of all time, Taxi Driver and Goodfellas and Raging Bull and Casino. And recently, whoa, what the hell was that? The Wolves of Wall Street. And so many, Last Temptation of Christ. He won an Academy Award, finally, well-deserved after so many times losing, with some of his amazing, groundbreaking films, like Taxi Driver didn't win Best Picture, and he didn't win, Best Director for that. He didn't win Best Director for Goodfellas. He didn't win Best Director for Raging Bull. But he did win one, finally, a few years ago for The Departed. And it was a good film. But I think that more than anything, they gave him that award because of his deserving one for so many years getting bypassed. And it's so funny in the history of film, and Martin Scorsese is truly a student and lover of film and cinema, which we'll get into the discussion a little later in this podcast. But it was funny. In 1980, for example, he lost Best Director when he had Raging Bull, which is a groundbreaking film, which Robert De Niro won the Academy Award for. But Scorsese did not win. He was beaten by Robert Redford, who had directed his first film ever called Ordinary People, and that won the Oscar. Or he won, Redford won. And it was kind of an upset, although that movie was very popular and Redford was still a very popular actor. And so he got, a lot of hype for that. But still, Martin Scorsese, come on, Raging Bull. Then, 10 years later, in 1990, he puts out Goodfellas, which really is perhaps his best overall, at least mob film, no doubt about it. Casino's pretty good, but there's not a wasted scene in Goodfellas. It's almost a perfect film. And he gets up against, I believe, Dancing with Wolves. I think he lost, what year did Goodfellas come out? I know that he lost as Best Director for Goodfellas to Kevin Costner, another popular pretty boy actor, just like Robert Redford, who directed his first film. And so here's Martin Scorsese, directed some of the most groundbreaking and best films of the last 20 years, and he was continually beaten for Best Director, and a couple of times by the same kind of director, a first-time, cinema, heartthrob. Kevin Costner 1 year, Robert Redford another year. Finally, they gave it to him for The Departed, which was another good mob film, but certainly wasn't in the caliber of Goodfellas or Taxi Driver or Raging Bull. Or other films like that. But at least he's got one on his shelf, which is important. And I think he may get another one. And as I said, I don't really talk a lot about movies here, but Martin Scorsese is one of my favorite directors. He really is a student of film. When you watch, if you ever listen to an interview with him or read an interview with him, you'll see just how immersed he is in movies. This is a man who's clearly living and following his passion. And I don't know what else he could be or what else he could do. He knows everything about film dating back to its earliest days. And if you watch one of his movies, It's almost like a history lesson in cinema. Because throughout many of his movies, he will recreate or pay homage to certain film directors or certain films or even a certain scene from a certain movie by a certain director. That's how many layers he goes in his knowledge. And if you yourself have a knowledge of movies, you will watch a Scorsese film and you will see a camera angle or a different shot or the way a scene is lit. Excuse me, sorry. And you will go, ah, that's just like blah, blah, blah. That's what cinema is all about. That's what movie making is really all about. And so that's what makes it really fun and interesting and makes it something that you can learn about and appreciate. And then you begin to get a lot of those references. Some people, they fly right over their heads. They don't even know what you're talking about. But if you invest your time and do a little research and do a little reading, especially in a Martin Scorsese film, and he has certainly not only paid homage to many of the great filmmakers or great films in Hollywood's history, but he has also created his own style that others copy. And that's the greatest compliment of all. I do believe that that phrase, that if you impersonate or mimic or, you know, not so, don't copy, but you use someone else's, you know, techniques in certain ways, that is the highest compliment. I like to do, you know, voice impressions. And not only do I do them of, you know, maybe famous people, but I also do them of people in my regular life. And certainly you exaggerate and you make fun, but, you know, as a light kidding, but it's not mean-spirited at all. And in my case, I believe that it is truly the highest compliment, what the heck, I could give to someone, because that means that I am paying attention to you. If I'm taking enough time to notice what your voice is like or your mannerisms are, that means I'm paying attention to you. That means you're on my radar screen. So if I do an impersonation of somebody or make a joke about something that they say or a mannerism, I consider that a compliment to them, because that means I'm paying attention. And that is the same way with Martin Scorsese. There are many films where you can watch and you can say, oh, well, there's a Martin Scorsese move. Somebody's a big Marty fan. I bring this up because right now there is a film that will be coming out in the theaters. Well, it has been out in the theaters, but will be coming to Netflix very soon. In fact, this podcast should initially hit on Monday, November 25th, and I believe on November 27th is when The Irishman, Martin Scorsese's latest film, will debut on Netflix. It did open earlier this month at a very few theaters around the country, just to be eligible for Oscar consideration. But Netflix, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, in the stream world, has gotten into not only creating original content for television streaming, but they are also now funding and producing movies for theatrical release as well as use on Netflix. So they continue to branch out and be a major player. And when major studios in Hollywood would not give a guy like Martin Scorsese, a legend, the money to make this new film called The Irishman, it was Netflix who stood up and came to the table with anywhere estimates from $159 million to $200 million. That's a lot of money. But they felt it was worth it to work with Martin Scorsese and give him what he needed to tell his story. And this film cost so much money because there was quite a bit of computer effects involved in order to make the aging of many of the characters come to life. Because the film goes back in time, and rather than using younger actors or using makeup, they tried the latest in CGI, computer graphics, to take Robert De Niro and de-age him. So De Niro is like 76 years old, but in the film it flashes back to when he was in his 20s and in his 40s and in his 50s. And I have to say, I've seen the movie. I went to the theatrical release, and the technology is pretty good. You could sort of tell, because you know how old De Niro is, and you could sort of, but it, you know, if you're just watching it without looking for it, it looks almost seamless. And you really shouldn't be paying attention to that. You should be paying attention to the film anyway and the story. So, but I wanted to talk about The Irishman because I think it is it's really a throwback film. And I would urge you to see it. When the Academy Award nominations come out, I would almost guarantee that it is going to get a slew of nominations. And deservedly so. Martin Scorsese will be nominated for Director of the Year, Best Director. The film will be nominated for Best Picture. The screenplay will be nominated. I think it was Steve Zillion, or Zalalian. I can't remember. I don't know how you say his name. Or Zalian, I think that's how you say it, will be nominated for the screenplay. And the acting categories, I mean, Robert De Niro certainly will be nominated. Al Pacino certainly is a contender. Somebody who I think is going to definitely get nominated is Joe Pesci. And that's what I'm saying. Listen to that cast. Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro, and Al Pacino. The first time all three of them have worked together in a movie, and the first time that Pacino has worked with Martin Scorsese. And the first time that De Niro and Pesci have worked with Scorsese since Casino. So this is a milestone film on many levels. And the fact that, you know, at their age, they're all now in their mid to late 70s. Who knows if these actors may ever get together again. And they certainly have created some of the greatest films of the last 50 years. I've already mentioned some of the ones that Martin Scorsese has done. Robert De Niro's list, while includes many films with Scorsese, has also done things without Martin Scorsese. For example, he won his first Oscar without him. He won his first Oscar for Godfather Part II, playing the young Vito Corleone. And he's made countless great films. One film that I would suggest you go see that that Robert De Niro made is from the 80s. And it's a comedy. And you don't and over the last several years, you know, Martin De Niro was in Meet the Fockers, and so he started to play up some of his comic abilities, but before those movies, he made this one in the mid-80s called Midnight Run with Charles Grodin. And it was one of the first times that he really showed his comic timing and his comic ability. And he and Charles Grodin have an amazing chemistry. And it's kind of a road buddy picture, but it's got some edge to it because of Robert De Niro. And Dennis Farina, the late Dennis Farina, is also in it and plays a good role. But check out Midnight Run if you've never seen it. It's, you know, Robert De Niro is known for these big, deep, you know, engrossing films. But there's one that's just really enjoyable and fun, Midnight Run. There's also another movie you might want to see of De Niro. I mean, if you haven't, I mean, you have to see Mean Streets. You have to see him in Godfather Part II. You have to see him in Taxi Driver. You have to see him in, you know, Raging Bull. Another great film that has gained more cult status over the years is another Martin Scorsese film with De Niro called The King of Comedy. And De Niro is fantastic in that, as well as Jerry Lewis, basically playing a character close to himself. And it's a movie that was way ahead of its time in terms of the idea of celebrity and stalking and the media. It's another one. King of Comedy, Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese. Another De Niro film that you may never have heard of or even seen was much later in his career, but what a clash of the titans. It's a movie called The Score. It didn't do great, but it really is a great, interesting, well-made heist movie. And you can't, once again, beat the cast. Robert De Niro, Edward Norton, really good actor, and Marlon Brando, late in his career. And when you watch Marlon Brando in this movie, and even though he's very big, he gained so much weight at the same time, when you watch him acting, you can't take your eyes off of him. Even though he's big and he's not attractive in any way, you still can't keep your eyes off of him. He really was the actor of his generation and a true movie star. So check out The Score as well. Another great Robert De Niro film. And I will put The Irishman right up there. Right up there. As I mentioned also, you know, Goodfellas and Casino, another De Niro, Scorsese, and Pesci film, as so was Raging Bull, and so was Goodfellas. Once again, these are iconic films, all made by one guy. It's amazing, Martin Scorsese. So it's great to have that group together, and now it's great to have Pacino finally in that group, because, of course, Al Pacino has made some of the great movies of the last 50 years. You know, the Godfather films, Dog Day Afternoon. He won an Oscar finally for A Scent of a Woman, but he made so many other great movies. There's a great movie as a lawyer called And Justice for All that you have to see. It gives one of the great all-time courtroom speeches. What can you say about Al Pacino? You know, so they are all on their top game in this movie. It is 3.5 hours long, and you will maybe sometimes take a look, but at the same time at your watch. But at the same time, it is a compelling film and a compelling story. It's about The Irishman is about a hitman for the mob, and yes, it's a Martin Scorsese mob movie. And you know what? It's nice to at least get one last one. If this is going to be the last one, he made a hell of a one. He chose a hell of a one to make, especially with this cast and this story. What's interesting about this is there's a lot of controversy. This is basically a memoir of a mob hitman who told his story. The book was called I Hear You Paint Houses. And that's a reference to a hitman. That's sort of the code that they would use. Because if you paint houses, it means that when you killed someone, the blood splat on the wall and you would paint houses that way. The blood. Oh, you got to love the mob, right? And De Niro, actually Scorsese and De Niro were going to make another film for another studio, a mob-related film. And in Robert De Niro's research, he came upon this book about Frank Sheeran, who was this mob hitman and who gave his memoir. And as he was reading this book for his research, he suddenly went to Martin Scorsese and said, wait a minute, I think we're making the wrong movie. I think our next project should be this book, not the other one. It should be this one. And I can tell you right now, I could already see the cast. I play this guy, Pesci plays this guy, and Pacino plays Jimmy Hoffa, the well-known union president from the 60s, who was a controversial figure and who was apparently killed and whose body was never found and remains a mystery until today. And certainly Jimmy Hoffa's name in the 50s and 60s was as well-known as Elvis Presley's. Because back then, much of America were of the working class were all in unions. And so the way that the Teamsters Union went, so did many other unions in terms of strikes and benefits and safety measures. So Jimmy Hoffa was a huge, huge character in the American landscape for many years. I would assume a lot of younger people, they have never heard of him. But believe me, for a good 20 or years or so, Jimmy Hoffa was a major, major figure in American politics and in American business and in America in general. And so what's interesting about this movie is that it does go back and show this real life character's life and how he got involved in the mob. It shows him back in World War II, and it also shows him then getting a job driving a truck and making his way into the organized crime world and into the Teamsters union itself. And along the way, it becomes very historical. According to this gentleman, Frank Sheeran, he saw, was involved, or certainly had information about some of the major events of the last 50 or 60 or 70 years, including the Kennedy assassination, including the Bay of Pigs, and including the mystery supposed execution of Jimmy Hoffa. Now, many are denying or doubting the accuracy of this book and of these events. And they're saying that they might be just be, you know, bragging by a mob hitman who wants to elevate his position, you know, in the world. And maybe that's true. But regardless, as a film, it doesn't pretend to be a documentary. And it shows these events according to this character's recollections. And it's up to you it's up to the audience to believe it or not. But at the same time, as a story and as a film, it certainly is intriguing. And I have to say, I did look at my watch one time and saying, wow, where are we at? Yeah, where are we in this in this 3.5 hour movie? But I was never bored. And the one thing about a Martin Scorsese film is the music that he uses, the camera angles that he uses, the way he edits and cuts and tells a story through film is always interesting, is never boring. And so, yes, 3.5 hours is a long time to commit, but you never get bored. It's a compelling story. It's some great filmmaking. And I ask for 1 hour a day, as I said earlier, 1 hour a week. This is 3.5 hours that is well spent. So most likely you won't be seeing it at a theater, but if you have Netflix, settle in for on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon and say, I'm going to watch The Irishman. It'll be there for you to watch as many times as you want. And you can stop and start if you want. But, you know, to do justice to the story, to do justice of the film, I would suggest you watch it straight through. It really is a very special film. And as I said, don't be left out at Oscar time, because you will hear the name The Irishman certainly nominated several times. Now, how many times it wins, who knows? but it will get multiple nominations. I would not be surprised if it is the most nominated film of the year, just because of the pedigree that it has, with so many Oscar winners involved in it, on screen and behind the scene. It's almost a shoo-in. And the other side of the coin is, it's not just picture, it's not just window dressing. This movie delivers. It's a certain genre. It's a great Martin Scorsese film. It's a great film. But if you like Martin Scorsese, if you love Martin Scorsese, you will just be enamored. It's all the best of his filmmaking is here, especially, as I say, the actors on the screen who he has worked with before and who they really up their game. And I have to say, as good as De Niro is, he carries this movie for 3.5 hours. He's on the screen most of the time. And Pacino is there about halfway through. And, you know, he just chews up the screen as this bigger-than-life Jimmy Hoffa character. But I have to say, amongst this 3.5 hours, and if you know Martin Scorsese movies, they can be a little rough, they can be a little violent, they can be a little bloody, they can be a little guts. That's part of, you know, he tries to show the real world of the mob world, and that does include a lot of very tense and very tough scenes of murder and violence. And that's sort of, that honesty is what is a trademark of Martin Scorsese movies too. But of all the, I guess, flashiness of that goes into this movie, this epic movie, 3.5 hours, that covers, you know, 30 or 40 year span of time. One of the most effective, charismatic, and compelling, captivating performances is from Joe Pesci. And we shouldn't be surprised at that. He's a great actor, and he's an Oscar winner as well. But what's so unique, and when I think he's going to get nominated, and there's a good chance he may win, amidst all these bigger-than-life characters, as I said, you know, De Niro having to play that kind of a bigger role because he's carrying this film, Pacino playing this bigger-than-life character, Jimmy Hoffa, so he has to play it big and a lot of gestures and just, you know, loud. And amidst all that, amidst all the violence and all the bigger than life kind of moments in this film, Joe Pesci plays this mob chieftain, this mob boss named Russell, so quiet, so still, so measured, so undistracted. There's a coolness and a calmness amidst all this chaos and violence. He says more with a look sometimes, or just a sigh, or just a few words, or when he does have a lot of lines, he says them very slow and very calm and almost at a whisper. And it really is almost a masterclass in acting. It would be very easy for Joe Pesci, because you know he is an actor who can play it big. His role in Goodfellas, as the, you know, he basically won that Academy Award for that one scene where he says, "What am I, a clown? What do I amuse you?" In that film, he was so big, he was chewing up the screen. So you know what he's capable of, and it almost feels like, well, that's Joe Pesci. You know, you've seen him in other movies where he's this big character. My Cousin Vinny. You know, that's Joe Pesci, right? That's what we think. You know, that's Joe, between My Cousin Vinny and Goodfellas, that's the way people think Joe Pesci is. I've never met him. I don't know. But I'll tell you, in this film, he is so calm and so cool. And he stands out because everybody else is so big and so demonstrative. And he is, it shows his power and his, the respect that he gets as that mob boss because of the way he handles himself. He says few words, and the words he says are almost whispered at times. But his demeanor is so different than anyone else in that movie. It's so calculated, and yet it's so natural and so calm. It's the brevity of what he does actually makes his role big, even though he seems to have made his portrayal so small in what he gives out. But that dichotomy is what makes his character stand out. It really is one of the best acting performances of the year. And ironically, Joe Pesci has been retired. He hasn't made a film in many, many years. And the way the story goes, he turned this movie down, jokingly or maybe not, 50 times before he finally agreed to do it. And De Niro was begging with him, how many times? Let's do it. Come on. How many times we get this chance? This could be our last chance that we work together, given our ages and given the way Hollywood movies are. And Pesci finally relented. And if you're a movie fan, thank God he did. Because he gives a heck of a performance. It's an Oscar caliber performance. It's, as I said before, it brevity isn't even the word. I'm trying to find the word here. The only thing I can say is in its quietness, in its calmness, it becomes one of the loudest, most important and compelling characters and performances in the movie. So, I don't want to say too much more about it because it's worth you seeing, but I do want to at least create some interest on your part to maybe watch it. It will be premiering on Netflix, and so you can watch it as many times as you want, and it really is a very, very special film, I think, and will be one that is nominated many, many times, this year at the Oscars. Oh, I have to mention too, a guy that plays a very good role in this is somebody you would never expect, Ray Romano. Everybody loves Raymond. Doesn't have a big role, but he plays it well. He's become a very, as much as he was a stand-up comedian, and he's known as Everybody Loves Raymond as a comic actor. He has really established himself as a very good straight actor. He's been in a couple of TV shows. As being a straight dramatic actor, and my gosh, if you get cast in a Martin Scorsese film, he could work with anybody in the world. So if he picks you, that's really saying something. So watch for Ray Romano. I think you'll be impressed. It's just on every level, the cinematography, the storytelling, the music, as in all Martin Scorsese films, the great use of classic rock music, the acting, the cast, the script, the dialogue, it's all there. It's all there. The Irishman, look for it. It drops on Netflix on November 27th. It has been at theaters, but it will be available on Netflix for your viewing pleasure, and I guarantee you, when the Oscar nominations come out, you will hear the name The Irishman many, many times. Now, you say, okay, Jim, that was interesting. Little movie review there, but okay, so what? Well, let me tell you this. Martin Scorsese also got into a little trouble. He was promoting this film, and, you know, he's out here trying to create, he's out talking to the media, and he was talking in October in advance of the film to a European magazine. And, okay, you know, Martin Scorsese is not going to make, you know, he has never made, as I said before, you know, a Marvel or a DC Comics or a superhero movie, right? That's really not his forte. And that now is the dominant role or the dominant type of genre of film in Hollywood. These movies have made billions and billions of dollars for movie theaters and their movie studios, and there is no end in sight. Don't forget, the first real one was the Superman film back in the 70s with Christopher Reeve, which was a huge hit, and there's about three or four of those that were made. Then there weren't many for a while. And then back in 1989, Tim Burton made the Batman film with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson, which became a huge, huge pop culture event, as well as one of the biggest grossing films of all time. And it spawned many sequels. And then it went away because it sort of got a little too cartoonish. And then Christopher Nolan came along and gave the entire genre of not only Batman, but the entire genre of the comic book film a new perspective. Instead of being whammo, zammo, and kind of escapist in a childish way, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but I just mean in a more basic way, Christopher Nolan's trilogy of the Batman character with Christian Bale treated this like a very serious, intelligent film. There were the gadgets, there were the stunts, there was the action, but it didn't feel cartoonish. And that changed the way audiences viewed the cartoon and superhero movies and the way movie makers approached them. And then after that series, clearly the one that elevated the superhero film and really put it on its road that is on now to be being the dominant genre in Hollywood films was the Iron Man film, the original Iron Man film with Robert Downey Jr. I guess you could say the Spider-Man films too, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films too. But really, it was... And they've made several different Spider-Man movies over the last, you know, 15 years or so. But Robert Downey, once again, brought a gravitas to the Tony Stark character amidst all the big special effects. The director, Jon Favreau, also amongst all that, did give a serious perspective to this, not a cartoony or comic book feel. And that's been responsible for the domination of comic book and superhero movies over the last 15 or 20 years. And because of that, and because of the popularity of these films, like Endgame and all the Thor movies and the Captain America movies and the Hulk movies and the Avenger movies and the Justice League movies and the Batman movies and the Iron Man movies and Wonder Woman and you name it, and the Spider-Man movies and the Batman versus Superman movies and you know, obviously Black Panther last year. Amidst all those films, what it has done is really pushed out a lot of the dramatic filmmakers. People like Martin Scorsese, who used to be the dominant directors and their movies used to be the dominant movies of the day. And they have taken the back seat as Hollywood has completely bought in the comic book world because that's where the money is. And Hollywood has always done that. As much as Hollywood has made great art films, Hollywood has always gone for the big tent hole, the tent pole movies to make pure money at the theaters. It's always been a money-making venture. Yes, they've made some artsy films along the way that didn't make a lot of money but won a lot of awards, but they're always looking for the big ones that make that, like a Star Wars. you know, and if they could get, if they can do both, like a Silence of the Lambs, or even better, or a Lord of the Rings, make hundreds of millions of dollars, make billions of dollars, like a Titanic, like an Avatar, and still win the Academy Awards, they'd love that. But it has pushed a lot of the more artsy directors, like Martin Scorsese, off the main stage. And so he did an article, he did an interview with a magazine, and they asked him about the Marvel movies. And he basically said that it just, they weren't for him. He said that Marvel or comic book movies were more like theme parks. And he said they were not cinema. And wow, did he take a lot of heat for that from not only movie fans, but also, you know, some of the movie makers of the day, the younger directors who are making those movies. And, you know, basically what Martin Scorsese was saying was, the quote was, "It isn't the cinema of human beings trying to convey emotional, psychological experiences to another human being." That's what Martin Scorsese movies are all about. And no, that's not what superhero or comic book movies are about. As I said, Martin Scorsese is a purist. So he looks at these movies and basically says, there's a lot of effects, there's a lot of crashes, there's a lot of explosions, there's not a lot of storytelling, there's not a lot of human interaction, there's not a lot of discovery about the human condition in these movies. He's right, but they're not meant to. They are meant to be purely escapism entertainment, which Hollywood has always done. Now, in Martin Scorsese's mind, cinema is about the art of movie making, the art of making a film with different emotions and different stories and different perspectives that you tell visually by the way the camera is placed, where the camera is placed, by the lighting, by the angles, by the expressions of actors. It's a completely different way of viewing and making a movie. So in reality, in theory, certainly Martin Scorsese is correct. They're not cinema in a strict definition of the word. But they aren't meant to be. And at the same time, younger audiences and younger directors took offense because in their minds, this is what cinema is to them. And Martin Scorsese has a very pointed and direct definition of what cinema is based on his knowledge and passion and history and of films. But you certainly can't deny that a younger director might say, well, I'm doing all that just in a different way, and that's what my audience is looking for. So a lot of younger directors and younger film fans started to look at Martin Scorsese as kind of a dinosaur, some old man that's complaining about, in my day, we didn't have any superheroes, which isn't true, because in the early days of movies, there was Tarzan and Flash Gordon. And there were similar movies made like that. But I think that Martin Scorsese was kind of lamenting the fact that stories about human beings and their own discoveries and frailties and struggles were not, those kind of stories weren't being told anymore in favor of these superhero stories where anything can happen. And especially with today's technology in these movies, any of the wildest thing you could think of can be created and done. And so they keep pushing the envelope for being bigger and more dramatic and more explosive and more exciting and more titillating. And I guess Martin Scorsese's view is, how bigger can you get? And, you know, if you've ever seen one of these movies made, these actors are basically not even acting on sets anymore. They're acting in big studios that are just blank walls, and all of their backgrounds are later, you know, put in by a computer. And so I'm sure he's lamenting the way films are made, where if you saw a film like The Godfather or Lawrence of Arabia or, you know, Citizen Kane, you know, there were real sets being built. They really went out on locations and shot and waited for the sunlight to be in the right spot, or dealt with the real elements in the real world. And right now, reality is not a part of many of the bigger films that are released. It's not reality. It's a heightened reality. It's science fiction. And Martin Scorsese is more of a humanist. Now, I have to say, I'm not a big fan of the superhero comic book movies of today. But that it has nothing to do with my age. Oh, people say, well, you know, you're older. But no. I went crazy for the first Batman movie in 1989. And I was in my mid-20s. And I went nuts, and I was buying all the Batman paraphernalia and the posters and the figures and the dolls and the books and the clocks and you name it. I loved it. But if you see that original Tim Burton Batman movie, it's not filled with crazy special effects. It is about the actors and the characters that they created. It is about Jack Nicholson's amazing performance as the Joker, even though it looks very different than today's Joker that is portrayed by Joaquin Phoenix, who's probably going to win the Academy Award for Best Actor. But it was the way that Michael Keaton played Batman. It was the way that Tim Burton told that story. I am more in the Martin Scorsese school of film fans. There's a great scene in The Irishman that I don't know a lot of people will even catch, but I caught it a second, and that's what I love about movies. In this 3.5-hour movie, it might be my favorite scene, and there's no actor in it, but it's just this great homage. I'm a huge Jackie Gleason and Honeymooner fan, and back in the late 60s and early 70s, Jackie Gleason had a show from Miami, and the show started with the camera like flying over the water going toward the shore and the skyline of Miami, and that was how it said, ladies and gentlemen, from live from Miami Beach, the Jackie Gleason show. That's how it started, with this orchestra playing, and there is a shot of that when the mobsters go to Miami Beach and he lifts that, and it's just so cool. It's not said, there's no attention brought to it, but when you see it and you remember the original, that's what Martin Scorsese movies are all about. That's almost my favorite scene of the movie. As I said before, no actors in it. So yeah, I'm of that school. I was never a big comic book fan when I was growing up. When I was growing up, comic books cost like 10 cents. They were printed on really bad paper stock, and they were bad ink, and your hands always got dirty. There were all those characters, those Marvel characters, like Spider-Man and Thor and Iron Man and the Hulk. There used to be cartoons. I would watch some of them, and Spider-Man. But I was never all that into the superhero genre. And so the Batman movie I liked, I think, because Batman wasn't a superhero in that he didn't have superhuman powers like most superheroes do. Batman, once again, he appealed to me because he was a human being and he was smart and intelligent and clever, and he was able to outsmart his villains with gadgets, but not superhero powers like being able to fly or spin webs or, you know, shake the world. Those things are a little too far-fetched for me. And I'm not a big fan of action and explosions and car chases. And so that's what those movies are all about, too. That's fine. As I said, it has nothing to do with age. Those movies were around when I was in my teens and in my 20s. They just never appealed to me. I like more of a story. And that's just me. I can appreciate what those movies do. I can appreciate the role that they play and why people are excited for them. But it's just not my cup of tea. So I feel sorry for Martin Scorsese because he got really slammed by a lot of people that felt that he was putting down these movies in a bad way, and he even wrote a New York Times op-ed to sort of explain what he was saying because he was taking so much heat and they didn't want him to, you know, hurt the box office at The Irishman if a lot of younger people decided to boycott it, because a lot of young people were very down on Martin Scorsese for making those comments, because he did sound like an old man saying, oh, in my day, we didn't have any superheroes. But I think he was just looking at it from his perspective of a filmmaker, of the kind of films that he makes and the kind of films that he prefers. He wasn't wrong, but he also wasn't right, because those films aren't made to be cinema per se in his definition. That's the great thing about movies at the end of the day. At the end of the day, we can see any kind of movie we want, and now any time we want. And we can enjoy them for what they are and what they do for us. So yeah, there's a lot of times people are talking about all these, you know, superhero movies, Endgame and all that, and I hear them talking about it. I can't add anything to the conversation. So I do feel a little out of touch, but then there's movies that those people haven't seen that I have, and I can add to the conversation. And those are the kind of movies that I enjoy. So poor Marty, just when he thought he was out, they pulled him back in with controversy. He hasn't been heard of in many years. He comes back with this great movie, and then right away he says something that... you know, it's a little controversial, and he's suddenly thrown into this great debate of, and even another great filmmaker, a contemporary of Martin Scorsese's, initially, Francis Ford Coppola, that did all the Godfather films, he agreed with Martin because they're from the same era, they make the same kind of movies, and he said that the superhero movies were despicable, and then he was backpedaling a few days later. So at the end of the day, everybody in this controversy, you know, they all love movies. And that's the important thing, is at the end of the day, we all love movies. We can all gravitate to the movies that we like more than others. Comedies, dramas, action movies, comic book movies, what, you know, romantic comedies, whatever it is that you like. It doesn't matter if the rest of the world likes them. It doesn't matter if every movie meets your standard. In today's world, we have the opportunity to watch any movie we want anytime. And we can watch the same movie that we like that may be 50 years old 100 times. You can keep watching that movie as much as you want. So I would say give Marty a break. Because you'd be doing yourself a disservice if you boycotted this movie just because of what he said about superhero movies and didn't see The Irishman. Because it is a masterclass in movies, and it might just open your eyes. So give Marty a break and give Marty a chance and see The Irishman. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com or is available at any of the sites where you download your favorite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and rate and pass along your good words about Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. You've been listening to episode 183, and I just want to thank you once again for your loyalty and your devotion to this podcast, because I enjoy doing it. I hope you enjoy listening to it. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen. What am I, a clown? What, do I amuse you?